Well, WoWo's Larry Kenny joins us here at the historyofwowo.com. Larry, it's good to hear you.
Randy, it's nice to talk to you, and I can't tell you how proud I am to be called WoWo's Larry Kenny.
Now, what years were you there?
I was there from 68 to 70. I think I was trying to recall, waiting for your call, the months. I think it was like April of 68 to, I know I left in March of 70. So it was just at 2 years or, you know, 2 years in a month. It was two full years.
And you were a young pup at that time.
Yeah, I was 11 years old. I turned 21 that August. I went there when I was 20 and 35 when I left 2 years.
I have to say, listening to the air check that we have on historyofwowo.com, you do not sound 20.
Oh, really?
No, not at all.
I'll tell you a funny story. Right before I went there, I was at WIRO in Peoria, which is where I started in radio when I was 15, actually. And I had been there a couple of years doing weekends. I got a call from a guy in Buffalo, New York, WBKW.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, a big top 40 station. Yeah. Jefferson Starr was the guy's name. He called me one afternoon at the station. He said, Larry, my name is Jefferson Starr. And I said, oh, my gosh, BKW. He said, yeah, you know me. I said, sure, sure. He said, good, because I'd like to offer you the afternoon slot here. And I said, oh, wow. Mr. Starr, that's amazing. I'd love, gosh, who wouldn't want to take it? But I have to finish school. And he said, well, we have many fine colleges here in the Buffalo area. I said, no, high school. I have 2 years of high school. And there was a long pause on the phone. He said, you're telling me you're a junior in high school? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, first of all, I don't believe you, but secondly, I believe you, but call me when you're out of high school. So I never did get back to him. By then, I had gone to WoWo.
So do you remember how you got the job at WoWo?
Yes,
how did that
I
happen?
I do. Tom Brown was the program director, and a friend of mine at WIRO, he said to me one day, I got a call from my friend Tom Brown, who's program director at WoWo in Fort Wayne. They're interested in you, and he's going to be coming through Peoria soon. He didn't tell me when, but he's going to be listening to you, checking you out. Then Tom Brown called me a couple months later and said he had in fact been through, you know, and would I be interested in coming to WoWo to do the evening show? And I said, I sure would. So I go out there, and I don't know if I told you the story or not, but my first night on the air at WoWo was a Monday night. I was on, I think, 6:30 to 11. It was kind of a strange setup, but it was 6:30 to 11. At about 7:15 or 7:45, I think it was, during the span of a three-minute record, they were all 3 minutes back then, you know, I developed laryngitis. I mean, just immediately hit me to the point of I could not even whisper a word. It had to be stress. I mean, I didn't feel that I felt comfortable, you know, but this hit me, and you can imagine how I felt my first night on the air. So I called Tom's house and did as best I could, and he said, I've been listening, and I can tell, but don't worry about it. Go on home and take care of yourself. Well, you can imagine, all the way home. But when I walked in my apartment, I literally was crying. I wasn't sobbing like a baby, but I had tears in my eyes. I felt I'd blown it. My wife opens the door. I walk in, and there, sitting in our living room, are Tom Brown and his wife, Susan. He came over to my house to be there when I got home to make sure that I knew it was okay and I wasn't going to get fired. And I'll never forget that. What a thing for him to do.
Wow.
You know? So, you know, he hugged me and he said, Larry, don't worry about it. It happens to every, you know, a lot of people. And so the next day I went to a doctor, and I'll never forget, I went to a pharmacy there in Fort Wayne to pick up my prescription. And I said, prescription for Larry Kenny, please. The pharmacist gets it and he comes over and he says, so that wasn't a bit, huh? I said, what? He said, I was listening last night. He said, we figured it was a publicity stunt. I said, no, I really have laryngitis. And that was my first indication of everybody in Fort Wayne listens to WoWo, you know. And, of course, I later found out everybody in the whole tri-state area listens to WoWo.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you right off the bat, Randy, when I said I was proud to be called WoWo's Larry Kenny, I've been in a lot of radio stations since then, you know, and a lot of markets. And that was the most fun 2 years I ever had in radio. And anybody who's ever worked there will tell you that.
That's exactly right. People who worked at the radio station 20 years after you feel that same way.
It was just the way they ran it. It was run so professionally. The people were the best people in the world. And don't get me wrong, I've enjoyed working other places with other people. But the promotions they did, anytime something was going on in the tri-state area, WoWo was there, you know, with a booth or a tent. We had the WoWo Aces basketball team, which was loved. And WoWo was like just the king of radio back in that whole area.
Now, what was the station lineup when you were there? It did change, I guess, in that 2 years, right?
A little bit, not too much. Bob Sievers, of course, was the morning man, had been for 30 years and was another 25 years after that. Jack Underwood was on after Bob. Then when I got there, Dale Ulmer was the afternoon guy from 2 to 6, I guess. Dale later went on to, while I was still there, went on to WIND in Chicago. And I think they brought in Stu Collins, who I know was there for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Then we had news from 6 to 6:30. I did 6:30 to 11. And then I think Michael O'Shea came in and did the all-night show.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, having listened to that air check, and I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this interview have already heard that.
Mm-hmm.
How do I say this? The music that WoWo was playing at that time, I didn't recognize any of it. And in fact, I looked every one of the, there were four songs you played in that short air check. Not one of them made the top 40 in the United States.
I don't recall what they were. I have to be honest with you. I haven't listened to the air check.
Let's see. One was an obscure Lulu song that never charted in the U.S. There was a Cliff Richard song that I'd never heard of, and one by the Caravelli Strings.
It was a transition period, yeah. Now that you mention it, when I first got there, Tom Brown had just himself recently got there and was in the midst of revamping the playlist. But yeah, I remember that we were playing some rather, it was bland, rather non, what's the word? I don't know.
Non-contemporary, maybe.
Well,
let me ask you, at the time you were there, was that the time there, probably at the very beginning, that WLYV beat WoWo in the ratings?
Oh, yeah, they came on with Top 40, and I think they had already begun when I got there. They were the big competition. Yeah,
yeah.
They were the rockers in town.
Do you remember what the reaction was within the radio station when that book came out?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was not too good. But I think I think they had seen it coming because LYV, as I said, I think had already begun when I got there and shocked WoWo into deciding we have to go top 40. So they were just starting to get that ready when I got there. I think it was within a month or two after I got there that we started then playing the Stones and the Beatles and stuff like that instead of the Mantovani Strings or whatever it was.
I've asked a lot of other guys the same question, but what was it like for you being on that big 50,000-watt signal at night?
Well, it hadn't really occurred. I knew it was 50,000 watts, and of course that's a big thing for any disc jockey to go to a 50,000-watt station. That was my first one. I came from a 5,000-watt station in Peoria, and I knew it was a big deal. It could be heard in a lot of places, but I didn't realize. My first month, I started getting letters from guys on U.S. Navy ships off the coast of England, you know, let alone West Virginia, North Carolina. The signal boomed out there, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when a signal, especially a 50,000-watt signal, hits salt water, it carries to England. I mean, booms in loud and clear. And I remember one time, and whenever I'd take requests, had a request line, people call and ask for a record. Half of them would be from West Virginia, North Carolina. And I remember one time asking somebody, several people, different times from those states. Somebody called me from Huntington, West Virginia, and I was familiar with WWVA, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I know you got great radio stations out there. Can I ask you why you listen to WoWo? And they were younger people, like high school, college kids. And so many of them said some variation of these words, because you all talk proper. And I said, you mean we don't have a southern accent? And they said, yeah. And I said, but I love a southern accent. And I found that so many of them were ashamed of their southern accent, or that other people, northern people, maybe thought, well, you know, that old stereotype,
right,
that we're dumb or we're ignorant because we're hillbillies. You know? And I spent so much time on the phone with those people saying, don't you ever lose that accent and be proud of it. I said, I'll take that accent over it. Now I'm going to get people mad at me here now, but I said, I always told them, listen, that's a beautiful accent. I love to hear it. I'll take that over a Brooklyn accent any day. And turns out my wife's from Brooklyn.
And then John Cigna punched you out.
Yeah, John Cigna. That's right. John, I got to tell you something about John Cigna. John Cigna, the whole time I was there, never stopped complaining that he couldn't get a pizza at 2 o'clock in the morning in Fort Wayne. He kept saying, you know, I'm Brooklyn. And I finally one day I said, you know, you're not in Brooklyn, John, okay?
Hey, one of the things I think a lot of people remember from your time at WoWo was a promotion called the Ulmer Kenny Lemonade Stand.
Yeah, the Ulmer. Homer Kenny Lemonade Stand.
Now, explain that to people who don't know what that is.
Okay, well, one of the great guys, and I wish I could remember their names, the names of the guys in promotion, but I can't because they were the best. Westinghouse stations always had fantastic promotions. I'm sure some of them were handed down from what had been successful at, you know, at IND in Chicago or BZ in Boston. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this one did too. I don't know. But somebody said, for the summer, let's have a promotion where kids can call in or write in or what, and get wrote in, and they would receive a promotion kit for their own Dale Ulmer, Larry Kenny lemonade stand. And it consisted of a big poster that said, this is an Ulmer Kenny lemonade stand, of course, with our pictures on it, and whoa, blazoned across the front. They would hang in front of their lemonade stand. And I'm sure they sent them some packets of lemonade, you know, and I remember them sending a recipe how to make lemonade and stuff like that. But mostly their kit was hang this promotional banner in front of your lemonade stand. And it was so great that summer, maybe we did it 2 summers, to drive around Fort Wayne and you'd see these little kids out front, you know, on the curb with their Ulmer Kenny lemonade stand.
Now, did you stop and collect your cut?
Yeah, I got my 10%. No, I always tipped them, you know, double. But I remember one time saying to a kid, you know, that's me in that picture. And it wasn't really a picture. It was a caricature. And the kid went, yeah. I thought, if he only knew, you know. So that was a fun promotion. They were always doing promotions like that.
I know you have a lot of funny stories. One of them in particular you said to ask you about is a car trip with Dugan Fry driving back from a winter carnival.
Dugan Fry. Great, great newsman.
Yep.
We also had great news, and everybody there was great. And I'm not just saying that. They were the best people I've ever worked with. So one time we're doing a winter carnival up in, I think, Anderson, Indiana, or somewhere up north of Fort Wayne, near the Michigan border.
Probably Angola.
Angola. That's exactly. Very good, Randy. I knew that, and I was testing it. It was in Angola, and they had a winter carnival. And, of course, Wo-Wo was there. A bunch of us went up, you know, and we had a booth and stuff. And they conned three or four of us into getting into this race where you race snowmobiles on the frozen lake. And it was the scariest thing I've ever done. I mean, those things really move, you know, super hard to race. And it's time to go home. And Dugan Fry asked me if he could have a ride home. I said, sure, I'm going right back to Fort Wayne. So we're heading back, and I had this big old Buick Electra 225, you know, and I'm zooming. I don't know how fast I was going, probably 80. He got pulled over by, I think it was a state cop. Dugan said, oh, you're going to get a ticket. I said, watch this. So, cop comes up, and I hand him my driver's license. And my plan worked beautifully from the start. He looks at the name, and he says, you're Larry Kenny, the Larry Kenny on Wo-Wo? And I said, yes, officer, are you listening? He said, well, yeah, sure. But I said, as a matter of fact, since you asked me that, I said, this is Dugan Fry right here. And the guy said, oh, Mr. Fry. Oh, he shook his hand, you know. I said, officer, here's the thing. I'm sorry I was speeding, but Dugan has to do the news tonight. No, it was a Sunday, and Dugan's didn't work on Sunday. But I said, Dugan has to make it for the, like, I think I said, the 7 o'clock newscast. It was like 5:30 at the time, you know. And, mm-hmm. And I said, if I don't get him back for the, I don't know, he might lose his job or something, you know. And the guy says, all right, okay, hands me my license. He says, okay, go ahead, but don't go too fast. And he starts to walk away, and Dugan says, you son of a gun. And I said, I told you I'd get out of it. So the cop comes walking back to the car, and he says, by the way, I better hear Mr. Fry on that 7 o'clock newscast. So we drove to Fort Wayne. I had to drive Dugan to the station. Now, mind you, this is 1968 or 9. There are no cell phones, you know. We go right to the station. Dugan calls his wife and says, I'll be home a little later. I'll tell you why when I get home. He goes into the newsroom. And I forget, and I might have been Cigna, whoever was supposed to do the 7 o'clock news, and said, now it's like 10 till 7, you know. And Dugan says, I'm doing the 7 o'clock. I'll explain why. So Dugan did the 7 o'clock newscast. I heard him on my way home. When Bob Sievers retired 60 years later, I went back to Fort Wayne for that. It was a wonderful event. And Dugan told that story on the dais that night about how I made him work on a Sunday.
I worked with Dugan when he replaced Bob Sievers, as a matter of fact, when Bob retired.
Speaking of Bob Sievers, of course, everybody's got a million funny stories about him. Great thing about Bob, well, one of the many great things about Bob, aside from being the nicest guy you ever met, was that Bob, even after all those years on the air, he would read anything that was on the sheet handed to him. I mean, if a salesman happened to go into his copy the day before or the morning before Bob went on air and wrote at the bottom of a Fisherman's Clothing Store commercial. Bob, be sure to return this to me when you're finished with it. Bob would read it, he'd say, "So friends, go down to Fisherman's, they'll take good care of you. Oh, and Bob, be sure to return this to me when you're off the air." And not even realize he had said it. So you had to be careful. So one day, I decided to play a little trick on Bob. Of course, I was there in the evenings, got off at 11 o'clock. And on my way out, I saw Bob's desk and his pile of, he had it ready for the next day. So I said, what the hell? So I went about halfway into his commercials and found a commercial for some store that was, it was right before Christmas, and they had a mattress sale going on. So I took the commercial out and retyped it. And I think I still have a tape of Bob somewhere saying on the air that day, the commercial went something like this. "Now, Mom, you've been wondering what to get Dad all here for Christmas. Well, Bob Sievers has got an idea for you. Go on down to such and such a store and tell him you want that special Bob Sievers deal on such and such a Deserta something mattress. Now, you'll get up Christmas morning, and Dad won't see anything under the tree for him, and he'll be upset. But, Mom, you take him by the hand, take him upstairs to that new mattress, and whammo."
You know what? Tapes of that circulated at that radio station for more than 20 years after that. And well, you're the guy who wrote that?
I don't know. I'm the guy who took it to him. I don't think I ever had the heart to tell him about it because he was kind of upset that it had happened.
I had always heard a guy named Ron Ross was blamed for that, but it was Larry Kenny who...
Well, it was me. Ron, I'm sorry. It was wonderful, but Bob was a little upset by it, so that's probably why I never told him.
A lot of us had wondered what era that came from, because it was passed down from generation to generation.
It was Christmas of 68. Now you know. The truth can be told.
You know what? If nothing came from this interview but just that tidbit, it would have been worth it, Larry. Well, what else would you like to talk about? Can you think of any other, I don't know, Sievers stories?
One of the pictures I sent you, I wish we had could find a copy of this somewhere, the audio. One of the pictures I sent you was called Hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it was four of us, Bob Sievers, me, I think Mike O'Shea, and Diamond Jim Brady. Maybe it was Dale Ulmer and Diamond Jim Brady. I remember it was at the arena, Fort Wayne.
The Coliseum?
Coliseum, yeah. And it was, I think, the Sport Vacation and Boat Show or something
that.
And we decided that WoWo's presentation on stage was going to be the four of us singing Hair, which was a big hit at the time by the Cow Hills.
Yeah.
So that's why we had those wigs on. And in the picture, you can see, the funniest thing in the picture to me is not the wigs and the hippie clothes, but Bob's standing there with his lyric sheet, staring at his lyric sheet, trying to remember the words. You know, it was kind of a complicated, give me a head with hair, flaxen, waxen, streaming. Poor Bob trying to keep up with, he had his lyrics written down. But there were so many great stories. I left there in 69. I had an offer to go to Cleveland to do afternoons at WKYC, the NBC-owned and operated station. And I was there for 3 years, and then they sold that to Nick Maletti, who owned the Cleveland Cavaliers, and became 3WE, an all-sports station.
Mm-hmm.
So I left there and went in 73 to WJJD in Chicago, and I was there for a year and got a call from WHN in New York. By that time, I was playing country music on the radio at WJJD, and WHN in New York was a country station, and they offered me the afternoon show at WHN, and I went there in 74, but after I was there about 3 months, they had me do the morning show, and I did the morning show there till 79, and at the same time I was doing, from 76 to 79, I was doing a game show on WOR-TV in New York called Bowling for Dollars, and it was on every night, five nights a week on WOR-TV.
I think it's something else that you certainly are known for is all of the character voices you provided for Don Imus.
Yeah, I started doing that for Imus in 73 while I was still at WJJD. I got a call from Imus's engineer, Walt Ryan, who had been my engineer at KYC in Cleveland. He said, "Don wanted me to call you." Of course, Imus was in Cleveland the same time I was. He was at WGAR doing mornings while I was doing afternoons at KYC. And the voices you mentioned, part of my show was, I didn't do it so much at WoWo. I developed it more when I got to KYC, doing a lot of characters on my show and impressions. So I called Imus, and he wanted to know if I would be interested in doing phone bits with him. We both had news on the hour. So for a year, before I ever met him, for a year while I was in Chicago and he was in New York, every hour on the hour during the morning, he would call me on our hotlines, and he'd say, "Let's do a Nixon and give me a general idea of what it was about, or do a Henry Kissinger or Howard Cosell, something like that." So I would ad lib with him these 2-3 minute bits. And pay me $50 a day for them, send me a check every month, you know. Then I got the chance to move then to WHN in New York, and the day I got there, he was doing three shows at a nightclub. He did a stand-up comedy act, so I went to the club, and that was the first time I had ever met him. I had been working with him for a year, but had never met him. And then I continued to do, even though I was working at a competing station, without him giving me any credit on the air by name, I was doing voices on his show occasionally. And then when I left HN in 79, then I just went full-time with Imus.
And so you did the Imus characters for, what, over 20 years, right?
35 years.
35 years?
35 years.
Wow.
I was with him and then on the radio, and then the last 8 or 9 years we were on MSNBC, of course. Yeah, I did it from 73 to 98.
And then I understand you also have done a lot of animation as well.
Yeah. And once I got to New York, I started doing network TV commercials and things. 30 years ago, I became the voice of Count Chocula on the Count Chocula TV commercial. Still do that.
You know, my wife was most impressed of that, of anything I told her about you.
That, and a lot of people are really pleasantly surprised when I tell them, also for 30 years, I've been the voice of Sonny the Cocoa Puffs bird.
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, right?
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Yahoo! Up here, I won't go cuckoo. And they say, you're the voice of that? And I say, yeah, well, you thought the bird was talking? It's a cartoon. And then almost every cartoon up to that time had been done in California. But for some reason, Rankin Bass, who, you know, they're the ones who, my childhood, I remember Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer mm-hmm. with Fred Astaire and, you know, all those great cartoons. Mm-hmm. Frosty the Snowman with Burl Ives. One day I got a call from my agent that said, you're to audition tomorrow at 2 for this new animated series called Thundercats. So I went to the audition, like 400 other people in New York and L.A., the audition, 400 people, and fortunately got the job doing a couple of the main voices for Thundercats, which we did 130 episodes of. It's become a classic. In fact, wow. I spend a lot of time now going around the country and the world, really, to Comic-Con, these conventions, signing autographs and giving symposiums and stuff, seminars about that. I did that Thundercats, which is the biggest one, really. I was Lion-O, the Lord of the Thundercats. I'm the guy who starts the show by saying, Thunder, Thunder, Thundercats, ho! And we did Silverhawks, Tiger Sharks, Karate Cats, oh, God, lots of them.
That's a fascinating career. Out of everyone that's worked at WoWo, I think you probably have had the most unusual path of anybody that I can think
of. Well, yeah, a lot of the guys have done really well. It was a great place to get a step up in the business. I'll tell you, they prepared us really well. Anybody who went to WoWo learned an awful lot about how to do radio right and how to have fun doing it.
Well, Larry, we're out of time here, but it's just been a real thrill talking to you, and it's really been exciting for you to contribute so much to our website.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Randy. As I told you personally, I want to thank you on behalf of everybody who ever worked there for the great job you've done on that website. I've often always wished somebody would do a real worthy tribute to that great station. And there have been some that people, you know, had good intent, but they didn't have the material that you've been able to garner. And you've really done service to that radio station with that website, and I thank you for that. I'm glad to be a part of it. If I come up with any other, dig through my stuff and find any more pictures and audio, I'll certainly get in touch with you.
Well, that would be terrific.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Randy.